Good morning, and welcome to another in our series of mini shiurim on the Book of Esther. We're learning in the merit of the IDF, Israel's emergency services, the hostages, and the injured. And we're in Paragimel, chapter 3, and we've been talking about the elevation of Haman. We had a couple of theories about Haman's position altogether, and why Ahasuerus creates what seems to be a brand new position. We had three ideas. One idea that after the assassination attempt, Ahasuerus wants somebody who's going to be loyal to him, who he's going to give power to. A second idea, not mutually exclusive, that Ahasuerus wants to interpose somebody between himself and the people. Because of the assassination attempt, he is withdrawing in fear. And then a third idea, which we're going to get to, that it's actually an attempt to make Esther happy, and that's an idea we'll see from the Malbim. But we asked, why choose Haman? Why Haman out of anybody? And track one, which we saw yesterday, is that this is a rags-to-riches story, the Gemara in Megillah, Tezayin Amud Aleph, that Haman was a barber in the place called Kfar Kartzum. There's a lot you could discuss regarding Kfar Kartzum and the position of being a barber, but just taking a basic approach, it's meant to say that he was somebody of low standing and somebody who would have been familiar with personal grooming because he is the one who is supposed to prepare Mordechai for the parade in chapter 6. Why would you put him in that position if he's not somebody who knows how to do that? But it's also about insulting Haman, as well as highlighting that this development is from Hashem. Hashem elevates the lowly and he brings down the great. So that when the chapter began with the words, Achar ha-devarim ha'ela, after these things, Ahasuerus elevated Haman, you could read that either as a logical consequence of the previous event. The previous event is the assassination attempt on Ahasuerus. So as a result of the assassination attempt, Ahasuerus is really afraid. Therefore, he elevates somebody lowly who's going to depend on him and interposes him between himself and the people. That's one way to read it. Or alternatively, a statement of, no, after the previous events, something else happened that was out of the blue. Meaning, after Hashem, as the Gemara in Megillah says, Hashem puts the refuah ahead of the makah, the cure ahead of the blow, the injury. So after Esther is in place in the palace, and after Mordechai saves Ahasuerus, now comes a dangerous elevation that's entirely out of the blue. After all those things, look at that. This guy who was a nobody is now suddenly the person in charge of the entire empire. All of that is what we've seen before. The other approach to the elevation of Haman is that he's not out of the blue. He's actually a member of the royal court. So the Gemara in Megillah, Yud Beis Amud Beis, says, Tana Memuchan ze Haman. Memuchan is actually Haman. We remember who Memuchan was. Memuchan was the one in chapter 1 who said, get rid of Vashti. That's Memuchan's identity. And lo and behold, here he is. Now he is Haman. Now, how could that be? How could he be the barber and also be the person who gave that advice as a leader on the king's council? So you could simply say, these are competing midrashim. One medrash says one thing, one medrash says another thing. They're both answering the same question, who is Haman and how did he get into power? And they're answering it in different ways. And that's, a legitimate approach, certainly. You could, on the other hand, try to harmonize it with the idea that he was the barber. Maybe he was the barber before he became a counselor. I've actually read articles that claim that in Persian times, as well as in Greek and Roman times, the barbershop was a place where people talk politics. So he somehow caught the ear of somebody with his insights on politics. Maybe. There is also a medrash in the Psikta, Psikta Zutrata on Esther, Perek Aleph, when it says, Vayomer Memuchan, and Memuchan said, so it notes that if you look in a proper Megillas Esther, the word is not written Memuchan, it's written Mumchan. Mumchan. A mum is a defect, a mum is a blemish. What does that have to do with anything? So first it says, Mumchan like Muchan, he was prepared. Shaya Muchan Leporanus. He was prepared for destruction. He was designated for destruction from the start. That's one approach. And then the other approach, Mimuchan, Hedyot Shebechulan. He was the lowest of all of them. He was the least complete out of all of them. And Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana said, Mikan Shehedyot Kofetz Barosh. You see, from the fact that he goes first, he says, here's what I think you should do before anybody else can speak, even though he's the last member of the council listed there in the text. That's because he's lowly. So maybe within that context, within this second view, that he was actually low man on the totem pole, maybe the answer really is that he was... maybe the answer really is that he had been the barber and somehow he ended up in this position, but he's still low man on the totem pole. Could be. You could reconcile the two midrashim. But here's the big question. Why take this approach that he is a member of the court? We saw why you would take the approach that he was out of nowhere and why that would have appealed to Achashverosh. But why take the approach that he's a member of the council? So first of all, because it's a little odd that this fellow Memuchan, who jumped out there with advice about what to do with Vashti, would just disappear for the rest of the Megillah. And it's odd that Achashverosh would take somebody out of nowhere, although now we've seen a justification. So I'll say, oh, Memuchan, he's the one from that council over there. Now he is Haman. Of course, if you take the approach that we saw in chapter 2 from the Targum, that Achashverosh got rid of that entire council, then this idea doesn't start. Okay. What's the message of saying this, though? Like, why? How would this fit our overall message? Well, it would explain more about Haman. And about the odd advice to Achashverosh in Perek Aleph about getting rid of Vashti. It explains more about Haman. Haman is power hungry. He's also trying to get rid of Vashti potentially as a competitor. So another advantage of this approach, that Haman was actually part of the king's council to begin with, is that it sets up Haman as a competitor to Vashti, and he got rid of her, and now he came into power, and that would help with chapter 3, sentence 1, which said, Achar hadvarim ha'ele, after these things, then, right? It's no longer after these things, because those things were out of the blue. Look at that. How in the world did this guy become powerful? But it fits as a logical consequence. He succeeded in eliminating Vashti, and therefore, he rose to power. Right, so before we said Achar HaDvarim Ha'ele could be read as, wow, this is out of the blue, this guy became powerful, imagine that. Or you could read it as a logical consequence of the assassination attempt. Achashverosh wants to elevate somebody who is beholden to him and so on. Now we're saying it's a logical consequence. Haman got rid of Vashti and now look, he's in power. Now I come back to a point that I hinted at before, which is that the Malbim has a different read altogether. He also believes that Haman is a member of the court, but he thinks Haman is actually Mehuman, not Memuchan. Mehuman was the first person listed in the group Achashverosh sent to summon Vashti. That's who Mehuman was in chapter 1, sentence 10. So he's also a member of the royal court. He is the head of the group that went to bring Vashti. And Malbim's theory is that this is the group that leads to the elevation of Esther. And what Achashverosh is trying to do by elevating him is to say to Esther, look, I have rewarded the person whose actions led to your rise. That's the idea. Reading my translation of what Malbim says. The commentators explain that once Achashverosh forgot that Esther had told them this in Mordechai's name, meaning this is within Malbim has this idea that Achashverosh only remembers that Esther told him, and that's why later on in the Megillah he has to learn from the chronicles that Mordechai was the one who told him. So Achashverosh thinks that Esther was the one who told him this. He wants Esther to be rewarded. This king very much wished, especially to reward those who benefited him. He found nothing he could do to repay Esther for saving his life from destruction, so he thought this would be good for her, to help the officers who counseled him to take Esther. And the first one of these Sarisim was Mehuman. So that's his idea, that it was Mehuman. And he believes that Mehuman was the one who had advised Achashverosh to seek the girls in the beginning of chapter 2. Obviously not reading that story like the Targum did. He actually has more to say there also about about Mehuman potentially claiming that he was the one who told Achashverosh about the assassination attempt. Take a look at Ed Malbim there. So that's another read of the story, clearly different from what we've been saying before. Very interesting approach, though. But here's a big question. What does this add to our understanding of the book's themes? With either approach, whether you take it that Haman is from nowhere or that Haman is a powerful person, it provides Musar about seeking power, right? It isn't necessarily going to be good for you. That's one. Number two, also with either approach to Haman's background, it supports the image of Achashverosh as a very scared person. He's interposing Haman between himself and the people, and especially if you're saying he took somebody with no standing, so that he would be beholden to him. So it supports our view of Achashverosh. Also, if I take the first approach, the rags-to-riches approach, it really emphasizes that even the elevation of Haman is part of a divine plan. Everything in this story is being manipulated by God to get to certain results. There is one problem, though, with all of these approaches and all of these achar hadvarim ha'eles, which Ibn Ezra just notes very mildly in the beginning of the chapter. If you were to take a look in chapter 3, sentence 7, you would find that Haman gets angry about Mordechai not bowing to him in year 12 of Achashverosh's reign. Bishnas Shtem Esrei, in year 12 of Achashverosh's reign. Esther became queen in year 7 of Achashverosh's reign. 5 years elapsed between chapter 2 and chapter 3. So if you're trying to tell me that that this is a consequence of the assassination attempt, why did 5 years elapse? So you could suggest, unlike Ibn Ezra, that the answer is the 5 years are actually between the elevation of Esther and the assassination attempt. The assassination attempt at the end of chapter 2 was actually in year 12. You could do that. That's not even Ezra's view, but you could suggest that the 5 years are before the assassination attempt. That would be one answer. Alternatively, you could say, as Malbim does regarding the elevation of Haman, the Malbim says that in the beginning of chapter 3, when it describes the elevation of Haman, it says Gidal Hamelech Achashverosh es Haman. Hagagi, It says that he elevated Haman and Vayinase'ehu. He made him great. Some album says it was a gradual elevation to prevent rejection by the people. So in other words, it could be a reaction to the assassination attempt, but it's a gradual process to put Haman in place at the head of everybody. It started in year 7 and culminated in year 12. That could be a way to deal with the problem.